Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The RAND Corporation has just released its long-awaited report concerning the challenges that Vermont will face if lawmakers give their approval to legislation legalizing marijuana. The 218-page report outlines the various regulatory structures that could be used, and it details a variety of ways to tax the sale of marijuana. Governor Peter Shumlin says the report provides the state with valuable information for the upcoming legislative debate.
Basically, what that report does is it looks at our pioneers in Colorado and in Washington State and tries to learn lessons from them in terms of what's working, what's not working. Not so much, hey, go ahead with marijuana legalization with great fury or don't do it. I think it'll just say, here are your challenges, here are your opportunities, here are the pros, here are the cons.
So what are the highlights of the report, and what are the many options that could be used if lawmakers vote to legalize marijuana? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Bo Kilmer. He's one of the authors of the report, and he's the co-director of the RAND Drug Policy Research Center. Bo, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Bob, it's great to be back on.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. If lawmakers do vote to legalize marijuana, what regulatory structure should be used? Should Vermont follow the lead of Colorado and Washington and allow for-profit businesses to open stores and sell marijuana? Or perhaps should Vermont's state liquor store model, would that be a better approach? And what should be the minimum age to purchase marijuana? We are looking at the new RAND report, which doesn't address the pros and cons of legalizing marijuana, but instead looks at a variety of policy options that are available if Vermont lawmakers legalize marijuana. 1-800-639-2211 is our phone number, or you can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Bo, let's start with this first point, because I want to make sure that everybody is clear at the outset of the program that the purpose of your report was not to make a recommendation concerning the legalization of marijuana. Rather, the purpose was to look at many of the decisions that would need to be addressed in the event that the legislature votes to legalize marijuana.
That's exactly right, Bob. I mean, there's a lot in this report. It's a couple hundred pages, about 8 chapters. And the one thing you won't find in the report is a recommendation about what Vermont should do with respect to marijuana. It doesn't say Vermont should do X or Vermont should do Y. I mean, our goal really was to kind of provide insights for kind of future discussions about marijuana policy in Vermont and in other jurisdictions, and really highlight some of the uncertainties surrounding some of these regulatory decisions and also some of the health consequences. So we're really hoping that this serves as a foundation for the discussion.
So, Bo, I think when most people hear that lawmakers might consider a bill to legalize marijuana, they immediately think about the regulatory structure that's being used in two states that have legalized marijuana, that being Colorado and Washington. In those states, there are for-profit businesses that operate stores, and there's a state tax on marijuana. But your report makes it very clear that this approach is only one of many options that could be used. So let's just see if we can go through some of those options, and you could give us the pros and cons of those possibilities. Let's look at state regulation, kind of the Colorado and Washington model.
Well, sure. So the discussion in most of the United States is really kind of focused on this binary decision between prohibiting marijuana or allowing for-profit companies to come in and produce it, as is happening in Colorado and Washington, and as is expected to happen in Oregon and Alaska. And a key aspect of this report is really to kind of lay out all of the other options and, indicating that if you are a jurisdiction and you're thinking about doing something other than prohibiting marijuana, you actually have a lot of choices. For example, there are a number of intermediate options. For example, you could allow home production or maybe production kind of via Spanish-style marijuana cooperatives, which would create an option for legal supply with minimal risks. It can reduce the cost of prohibition and doesn't require major regulatory costs. But on the other hand, with these options, they're really not going to bring in much money, and they're not necessarily going to eliminate the black market. But it would be a step away from prohibition. Now, if a jurisdiction decides that it does want to allow large kind of large-scale production and try to generate serious revenues, you know, there also are a number of options besides the commercial marijuana model that are being adopted in Colorado and Washington. You know, for example, you could have a state monopoly where the state would be in charge of doing the production and the distribution. You know, and what this would prevent diversion to the black market. It would allow the state to set the price it thinks best serves the public interest. And it also can ensure that there's no promotion. However, this particular option doesn't get a lot of attention in the United States because of the federal prohibition. You know, if a state were to go down this path and try to implement a state monopoly, they would essentially be forcing their employees to violate federal law, and then those employees would be at risk of arrest. So that's why kind of outside of the United States, this particular option gets a lot more – is discussed a lot more than it is within the United States. But the report goes on from there. We also discuss an option which we call the near monopoly, where you could actually have a public authority which where the state would appoint members, you know, set policy. But the state would not necessarily be possessing or distributing the marijuana to the residents. And of course, there are other options with respect to allowing retail sales. You could allow nonprofit organizations, you know, perhaps those that have a board that's focused on public health issues or children's issues. They could be in charge of actually doing the production and the distribution. Or you could, or if you're going to create an industry, you could perhaps, you know, only limit the limit participation to what you could think of as for benefit corporations or B Corps. That is, those businesses that really kind of focus on the triple bottom line, where it's not just profits, but they're also focusing on people and planet. I mean, the bottom line is that if a jurisdiction is going to create a new industry for marijuana, you know, you may not necessarily want one that's exclusively focused on profit. So throughout the report, we kind of discuss these different options, and there's some other ones on the table that are also discussed. But the bottom line is that there's a lot of space in between prohibition and what's happening in Colorado and Washington.
And this would be a very important decision, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. This is a if you're thinking about the kind of the key issues with respect to marijuana legalization, this is probably the most important decision. Because the bottom line is that once you legalize marijuana, you're really going to reduce the production and the distribution costs, especially if you allow for-profit companies to come in that are really focused on efficiency. Now, this is important because when you reduce those costs, it could end up deflating the retail price, which not only has implications for taxation, but it also has implications for consumption independence. So the decisions you make, first of all, about who you're going to allow to supply are important. And then after you make that decision, there are a number of other decisions that you have to make. And, you know, the other key decision that confronts Vermont if they go down this path is really trying to figure out what they would do with respect to consumption and purchasing by out-of-state residents. You know, if you look at the size of the Vermont market, we estimated that for 2014, they're probably about, maybe close between 60 to 100,000 past month users. So let's say it's close to about 80,000. That's just within Vermont's borders. But there are nearly 40 times as many current marijuana users that live within 200 miles of Vermont than live within Vermont. So this is going to be an important decision for Vermont as well.
Now, you mentioned the problems with the federal government. It is illegal at the federal level. So how do states deal with this?
Well, you know, after Colorado and Washington passed their initiatives in November of 2014, everyone kept looking to the federal government to see what they were going to do. And it wasn't until August of 2013 that the U.S. Department of Justice released a memo indicating that for the time being, they weren't going to block implementation efforts in Colorado and Washington as long as they had strong enforcement and regulatory systems in place. However, the memo made it very clear that the federal government was not legalizing marijuana. And in fact, it said, hey, federal prosecutors, if you're thinking about going or kind of taking up one of these marijuana cases, here are kind of eight guidelines that should shape your decisions on this. You know, for example, if it was an organization that's supplying minors, you know, you should go after them. Or if they're serving as a front for organized crime. Or if they're helping to divert marijuana to other states, that they should actually kind of go to the top of the list. And so realize what this did. when this memo came out, it not only sent a signal to or to Washington and Colorado, it also sent a signal to other states and to other countries that for the time being, the Obama administration was willing to kind of tolerate for-profit companies coming in and producing this federally prohibited substances, or federally prohibited substance, as long as they played by their rules. And so far, I see no indication that the Obama administration is going to change course over the next couple of years. But you have to remember, these are just guidelines. In January of 2017, there's going to be a new administration. And it's unclear whether or not that administration is going to continue with this federal policy or whether or not they may try something else.
Today in the program, we're looking at a new RAND Corporation report involving many of the decisions that Vermont will face if lawmakers give their approval to legislation legalizing marijuana. Our guest today is Bo Kilmer. He's one of the authors of the report, co-director of the RAND Drug Policy Research Center. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about the regulatory structure. Should it be for-profit businesses that run this? Perhaps there's a state monopoly. Places like Washington, D.C. are just allowing people, Bo, I think, to grow and possess small amounts of marijuana, and there's really no business there, right?
Well, that's what the voters passed. It'll be interesting to kind of see what the D.C. City Council ends up doing. There are a few individuals that are on the D.C. City Council that are interested in kind of going beyond just allowing home production, and they would actually like to adopt a tax and regulate model. So it's kind of unclear how this is all going to play out. But it kind of speaks to this larger issue that if you are a jurisdiction thinking about doing something besides prohibiting marijuana, you do have choices.
Am I right, Bo, that the four states that have legalized marijuana so far, that being Colorado, Washington, Alaska, and Oregon, have they all done it through public referendum?
Yes, that is correct. And so it was in November of 2012, it was passed in Colorado and Washington. And then in November of 2014, that's when it passed in Oregon and Alaska.
So if Vermont lawmakers decided to legalize marijuana this year or next year, Vermont could become the first state to do it through a legislative process.
Yes, you're correct.
And so why do you think it is in those four states that it was not a legislative approach, it was a referendum approach?
Well, in those particular states, it's not necessarily hard to get an initiative on the ballot as long as you have money behind getting the signatures and behind promoting the initiative. It can be a serious issue within these states, and in a lot of places, a lot of politicians just don't want to touch this issue. They think it's too controversial, so you might as well leave it up to the voters. But one a potential drawback with the initiative process is that it doesn't necessarily allow for a lot of deliberation. Kind of depending on what state you're in, once that initiative passes, it could be quite difficult to make changes kind of over time. And so that's one particular advantage of actually kind of doing this through the legislative process. Not only can there be, negotiations and compromise as the policies are being developed, but you can also build in the ability to make changes. Because the bottom line is that no one knows how to do this. There's a lot of confusion. A lot of people think that the Netherlands had legalized marijuana. No, that's not the case. Yes, if you're over 18, you can walk into one of those coffee shops and buy up to 5 grams because they have an official policy of not enforcing the law against small-scale transactions. So you can kind of think about it being legal in the front door. However, it's still illegal to grow and distribute marijuana to those stores in the Netherlands. So you still have a black market there, which really kind of raises the prices. So we can't just necessarily look to the Netherlands to get insights here. And so, so for these early adopters, they've passed these initiatives, but they're likely going, as they learn how the market evolves and as they learn from other jurisdictions, they're probably going to want to make changes. And so one of the issues confronting Vermont and kind of other jurisdictions that are thinking about this is, how flexible is the regime going to be? And this is something you want to think about kind of when you are, before you pass one of these bills. You want to think about, you know, for example, you know, no one knows the best way to tax. And so you might have an initial tax rate. But what happens if you learn 5 years down the line that, you know, that there's actually a better way to tax? Is this something that's going to have to go back to the legislature? Or could you actually set up an independent commission that would be in charge of in charge of kind of setting the taxes and changing them over time? I mean, there are a number of these issues that really do confront jurisdictions very early on in the process when you're thinking about designing these regimes.
Today on the program, we are looking at the new RAND Corporation report just released last week that outlines the challenges that Vermont will face if lawmakers give their approval to legislation legalizing marijuana. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at this new RAND Corporation report outlining some of the options and challenges that Vermont will face if the legislature legalizes marijuana in the coming years. And our guest, Bo Kilmer, one of the authors of the report, he's also co-director of the RAND Drug Policy Research Center. 1-800-639-2211 is our phone number. Bo, we got a lot of people who've got a lot of questions for you. So let's start with Mike in Essex Junction. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. My question, I have not read the report, and I haven't heard your guest speak to this subject yet so far. So my question is, what is the position of the RAND Corporation relative to legalizing marijuana, and what the effect would be on commercial insurance rates? And I'm specifically talking about workman's compensation. My insurance carrier will not allow me to hire people that have trace of THC in their bloodstream. It's a safety issue. And I'm wondering what, if any, position the RAND Corporation has taken, because this, if they legalize this drug, it is going to make it impossible or incredibly expensive for businesses to get commercial insurance, specifically workman's comp.
No, Mike, that is an excellent point. And just to be clear, RAND doesn't have an official position on marijuana legalization in general. You know, the goal of the report really was to kind of highlight some of these different options and some of the, you know, and some of the uncertainty surrounding a lot of these issues. But with respect to workman's compensation, I mean, there are also these other issues about, you know, companies trying to make sure they comply with federal drug-free statutes. And so with that, I think it's going to be important to pay really close attention to what ends up happening in Colorado and in Washington. And in fact, one of the things we talk about in the report is that with respect to some of these outcomes, it really is kind of too early to tell. You know, the stores opened up in Colorado in January of 2014, and then they opened up in Washington in July of 2014. So this particular issue is just one of which that we're going to be paying really close attention to kind of over time.
And Bo, the report also looks at health concerns, because I know there are a number of people listening to this program today who are thinking that Vermont already legalizes the use of one major drug, and that's alcohol. And there are many serious health problems associated with the use of alcohol. So some listeners may be thinking, why on earth would lawmakers want to consider legalizing yet another drug?
Well, Bob, we devote an entire chapter to the consequences of marijuana use. And in fact, that chapter in and of itself could have been a separate book. And actually, one of my co-authors, Rosalie Licarda Bakula, literally has written the book on the health consequences. You know, but what we try to do in that chapter is really try to focus on the issues that we think are going to be most pertinent for the debate. And, you know, while marijuana use is strongly correlated with a lot of adverse outcomes, you know, it's much harder to ascertain whether or not marijuana actually caused those outcomes. So we spent some time talking about that and some of the difficulties in the literature. That said, there are some studies which show that there are some very direct consequences. So if you think about the acute health consequences associated with marijuana, you've got accidents. There's obviously a cognitive impairment during intoxication. medication. You also have issues surrounding anxiety and increase in panic, and sometimes this leads to emergency department visits. If you're thinking about the chronic health consequences associated with marijuana use, the evidence is obviously very clear that it increases the risk for dependence. Now, let's be clear. Marijuana dependence is not as harmful as heroin dependence. But that said, it still does affect people. It affects their lives. It affects their intimates. And it's something that should be taken seriously. Other chronic health consequences include bronchitis. There's also suggestive literature looking at the increase in psychotic episodes, cardiovascular disease, testicular cancer. And so there are, and so while there, there's a lot of uncertainty about some of the consequences, with these consequences I just mentioned, the evidence is pretty clear. Now, the thing you have to keep in mind, though, is if a state legalizes and marijuana use goes up and marijuana dependence goes up, it's still not entirely clear what the overall effect on public health is going to be, because a lot is going to depend on how an increase in marijuana use affects, and legalization in general, how it influences the consumption of alcohol, the consumption of tobacco, and the consumption of prescription opiates. And that's something we just don't know that much about right now. And so we did our best to review the literature here. And the bottom line is that if you're looking at how an increase in marijuana use could influence alcohol, I mean, the literature really is mixed. And even if there was a consensus, it's not entirely clear that that research that was done during Prohibition, that would necessarily be applicable kind of post-legalization. With tobacco, there seems to be a lot of evidence suggesting that they are what economists call complements, that those who use marijuana are much more likely to use tobacco. And with respect to prescription opioids, you know, there aren't very many studies that are done out available, and I think there are a lot of people looking into this. But some of the early research suggests that marijuana and the prescription opioids may be economic substitutes, meaning that if you saw this increase in marijuana use, that you may see this decrease in prescription opioids. Now, let's be very clear. There is no consensus on this, but the bottom line is that if you want to be objective about this and you want to look at these public health consequences, you can't just focus on marijuana use and marijuana dependence. You really do have to kind of look at how this policy change could influence the consumption of other substances.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Andrea calling from Post Mills. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My comment question relates to what your guest was just talking about, how complicated an issue it is. In our family, we've had individuals who started as late teenagers using marijuana. Then it was illegal, ended up with jail, and the state putting them into rehab. For one person, it took over a dozen years, finally clean now. But I'm concerned, and I don't think it's fair for someone's life to be destroyed as far as getting work and any kind of meaningful employment afterwards with marijuana, where with alcohol that wouldn't be happening. But I'm concerned that if it becomes legal, you're going to go right back down that track again. So how do you determine the cost of treating someone for whom marijuana use is a real detriment to their health and their functionality as part of this whole discussion whether the state should go legal with it? And on the other side of the cost is if it is legal to use pot, then this person, people may be able to get better employment, be less a burden on the state as far as social services and all that. How do you determine all that?
No, Andrew, that's a great point. And so one of the we do spend some time in the report looking at treatment for marijuana in Vermont. And the most recent data suggests that in any given year in Vermont, there are between 9 to 10,000 admissions to substance use treatment. About 40% of those are for alcohol, about 40% are for heroin or prescription opioids, and about 14% of those, the primary drug is marijuana. And there was some research done by the Vermont Department of State in 2011, suggesting that the state that marijuana dependence costs the state with respect to treatment about $2 million a year. What's hard for us to do is really to try to predict what the overall cost would be on treatment kind of after legalization. On one hand, if you adopt a model where there, which pushes prices down and allows advertising, you would expect use to go up and also dependence. So that on one hand, that could create more incentives, or it could create more of a need for treatment. On the other hand, some of the most recent data suggest that for those that are going to treatment where marijuana is a primary substance, about 44% of them are there just because of a criminal justice referral. And it may be the case that after legalization, they wouldn't get that referral. So it makes it really hard for us to kind of project what the overall effect would be with respect to the cost of the treatment system. And then, as I said at the end of my last response, you need to look beyond marijuana as well. You also need to look at how it could influence the demand for treatment with respect to alcohol and also prescription opioids. So that's one of the things we do. This is what I mean by talking about the uncertainty. We really try to lay this out and help people understand here. This is why it's really hard to kind of put one specific number on this. And that's another issue with respect to the report is when we talk about, you know, when we look at how much marijuana people are currently consuming, how much they're spending, what we think could happen with respect to tax revenues. We really worked hard to try to frame everything in terms of ranges. And, you know, and we're really trying to be – in some cases, these ranges are quite large. But the bottom line is that for to the extent that we're dealing with a black market, no one really knows how this is going to play out. It's really hard to it's hard to kind of come up with one number in terms of you know these different values that we're looking at. So that's something I think in terms of as this discussion goes on in Vermont, I think it's going to be really important for people to keep in mind that if someone comes in and they're giving you these very specific numbers, you have to be skeptical. You really, when you're talking about the numbers, you need to be talking about ranges.
Let's talk to Nancy, who's calling from Rutland. Hi, Nancy. What's on your mind today? Nancy, are you there?
I'm from Walden Heights, and my name is Nancy, and I thank you for taking the call. I'm concerned about the fact that it's already a done deal because 85% of the people I was told by a politician want marijuana in the state. And as we used to have people say that religion is the opium of the people, we don't have religion anymore in the schools or anywhere except possibly homes. And so naturally the next choice would be opium or marijuana or alcohol or whatever it is. So I think it's a done deal already and we're just wasting all this money. What do you think, Sir Bo, about whether or not this is a big waste of money and it's already a done deal? I mean, do you just have to prove it to the people or prove it to the politicians or who are you trying to prove this to? Because it's definitely a drug and it definitely hurts people, but and I'm not for any of it, but it's here and we have to deal with it. So do you think it's a done deal, sir?
Nancy, no, I don't. When RAM was asked to come in and really try to lay out all of the potential options. You know, as I said earlier, so much of the discussion in the United States has been either looking at it at prohibition at one end or this for-profit commercial model at the other. And so what we're really trying to do is trying to lay out that, you know, make it clear that there are a number of other options. At this point, no one knows what the best option is, but that there are trade-offs with all of these, you know, and it's acknowledging what these trade-offs are. And the bottom line is that, you know, with each of these different options, whether or not you're weighing an increase in use for versus an increase in tax revenues, you know, a lot of this is all going to come down to people's values and how you value, you know, those different outcomes and the uncertainty surrounding them. So that's why with our report, we made it very clear that we weren't necessarily making a recommendation. And I have to say, you know, spending a fair amount of time in Vermont over the past 6-7 months, you know, it's been encouraging talking to a lot of different people and hearing kind of their concerns. And I mean, one of the highlights over the past 6 months in working on this was participating in the public hearing, where there were, you know, it was virtual and there were individuals kind of from all over the state. And I thought it was a very productive and a very civil conversation. And I'd never seen that in any other state. And so what I'm really hoping is that this report serves as a foundation and provides some of the facts that are needed to kind of go forward with this and kind of wait and highlight what the trade-offs are going to be. I mean, I think it's wrong to think that there are not trade-offs with any of these options. And so I think it's just putting those trade-offs out there and then letting people decide.
Let's talk to Brian in Sharon. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the program.
Hi. It's obviously inevitable that marijuana is going to be legalized. And my concern is keeping it out of the greedy hands of corporations who through their marketing, are going to make as pretty a product as they possibly can. And inevitably, it becomes cookies and brownies and all of those nifty products that become attractive to kids. And I'm all for the legalization, but I am very much against the marketing, making it a product that's packaged and presented in such a fashion that it becomes a problem that way, as far as kids being attracted to it.
Brian, that's a very good point. Bo, didn't that come up as an issue in Colorado initially? There were candies, gummy bears, all sorts of things that seemingly would attract younger people. And did Colorado move in and decide that they were going to prohibit that kind of sale?
No, edibles are an issue, and you can still purchase them in the state. And the same Washington, there are some edibles you could purchase. I don't believe that you can get gummy bears infused with THC in Washington, although I'm not 100% sure. But, I mean, this gets to this larger issue about, you know, as Vermont's kind of undertaking as Vermonters are participating in these discussions, this is an option. I mean, now, first of all, even if you allow private companies to get involved early on in the regulations, you can just not allow – you can decide not to allow edibles, not to allow the concentrates, not to allow kind of the e-cigarettes that have hash oil in them instead of a nicotine solution. These are all choices, and this is something that we talk about quite a bit in the report. But to the extent that there is this concern that if you allow for-profit companies to get involved, that they are eventually going to really try to focus on marketing and advertising. And, you know, you just can't in the United States, because of our commercial free speech doctrine, it makes it really hard just to ban advertising. You know, in other countries you can do this. But you could try to put restrictions on it, but it really is an issue. And so that's why we also lay out some of these other options out there, which may not necessarily create the marketing and the advertising that a lot of people are concerned with. But as I said, there's kind of a trade-off, you know, especially with the state monopoly. You know, if you look at what happened after the repeal of alcohol prohibition in the 1930s, you know, most states didn't necessarily just kind of open it up to the private market. You know, it was heavily regulated. You had these monopolies. And even in, you know, Vermont right now, the state is the wholesaler. And the public health research suggests that monopoly model is much better for public health than just kind of opening it up to the to a free market or deregulating. But as I said, that this is there's some tension with the federal government here because of the federal prohibition. And so that's why we begin talking about some of these other options too, and that, you know, if Vermont decides that they do want to create an industry here, then one of the decisions they're going to have to make is, do they want that industry to only be focused on maximizing profits? You know, if they're going to do it, you know, we talked about the B Corps, or kind of the socially responsible model. I mean, you know, one possibility is that if they're going to allow for-profit companies, they have to be focused on more than just profit. You know, we talk about the nonprofit option. And so the bottom line, and it should be, I want to make it clear that nonprofit is not the same as non-revenue. You know, you still can get tax revenue there. And so I'm hoping that by kind of laying this all out in the report, that this can be part of the discussion. Because, you know, as Brian, I think you're exactly right. I think a lot of people are worried about the marketing and kind of what happens when you develop this industry. And as we've kind of seen with the industry with alcohol and tobacco, once it gets big and once you have lobbying power, you know, they often fight against regulation and they fight against taxation. So I think this is going to be a big piece of the discussion in Vermont and in other places. And we're hoping people understand that there are other options out there.
Bo Kilmer is co-director of the RAND Drug Policy Research Center. Bo, many thanks for being on the program today.
Bob, it was great to be back on.
Coming up next, I'll talk with two lawmakers about this issue. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In a few weeks, there will be legislation at the State House that will legalize the sale and possession of marijuana in Vermont. Sponsors of that bill are still working out the details about the regulatory structure that will be used with their plan. And when that bill is formally introduced, we'll have a full Vermont Edition program on that legislation, the pros and the cons. Well, right now we have a preview of that debate. We're joined by two lawmakers who have very different points of view about this issue. We have Caledonia Senator Joe Benning and Irisburg Representative Vicki Strong. I'd like to welcome both of you to Vermont Edition today.
Thank you. It's a great opportunity to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks for having us, Bob.
Senator Benning, let's start with you. What are your general thoughts about the legalization of marijuana in Vermont?
Generally speaking, from a libertarian standpoint, I support the legalization. I don't think that prohibition has worked or has helped us. I think we have spent a lot of money in a subject that really doesn't create a situation that, for me, requires criminal intervention or even civil intervention. But there are all kinds of nuances to what I've just told you that would probably take another hour to describe, and I don't want to leap out and say, legalize now. That's not where I'm coming from.
Well, we just heard from the RAND Corporation about many of the different structures that could be used, government structures, from for-profit corporations to nonprofits to state control. Do you think that Vermont should go slow?
I think Vermont should go very slow, and let me say that with decriminalization, we have taken a baby step to assess just what the reaction would be. I don't think the sky has fallen with respect to that. In reviewing the RAND report, and I spent the entire weekend going through it with a fine-tooth comb, it is obvious that it's not legalization per se that causes the problem. What causes the problem is the desire to have the state involved in regulating and taxing it. And there are many people who believe we have lots of money to be gained. The converse is also true. There are expenses that have to be made in order to get those revenues. And I'm not sure the state is in any kind of a position right now to be setting up the new employees or the regulations that would be necessary at a time when we have so much else on our plate. This is just not the time to do that. Having said that, if we simply took the Netherlands model and said we're going to move from decriminalization of small amounts by individuals to legalization of small amounts by individuals and kept the sale and the production of it illegal, we have a situation that I don't think would cost the state any money at all and would have very little impact on what we have since we've instituted decriminalization.
Representative Strong, what are your general thoughts about the legalization of marijuana in Vermont?
Well, first of all, I'm concerned about the message it does give to young people. I believe it's the wrong message right now. They equate legal with safe, and already we see a high use of opiates among our young people. Treatment centers are not adequate to support the need. Homelessness is an issue in our state. And, of course, impaired driving. It's really unforeseen how we're going to take care of impaired driving when it comes to marijuana use. Right now, our law enforcement is 100% against it in our state, and Department of Public Safety is concerned. So we have a lot of things to be thinking about in this mix as far as protection of our young people.
In the RAND report, Representative Strong, there was a statement about how many people currently use marijuana in Vermont, and it's one of the highest per capita of any state in the country. So would that indicate that the current prohibition isn't working?
Well, I think it would indicate that the message we're giving our young people isn't working, that they should have so much to strive for to be successful in their lives and careers, education goals, serving our country, and that we need to strengthen the message of productivity and excellence, and that habits greatly influence those things. And I have a saying I like to use in my life as I counsel people, that habits are like a comfortable chair. They're easy to get in and hard to get out of. And young people, when they're young, don't see that those habits can be destructive and often long-term battles.
And how did you feel about the decriminalization of marijuana? Did you support that?
Didn't. Because of the message it is giving again, young people still hear the word decriminalizing and then they think legal. The concept of decriminalizing was helping people not have to go through the court system and get help in other ways when there are issues with marijuana. But I voted against it for that message it gives young people. It's hard for them to discern.
Senator Benning, what about Representative Strong's point that young people are going to see legalization and say, hey, if it's legal, it must be safe?
I have another message that I don't like delivering to young people, Bob, and that is enforcement by the state of something that has really no impact on another's ability to be a free member of society, and doing it in a way that we are spending a heck of a lot of money. You know, if there are 60,000 to 100,000 Vermonters using marijuana at least once a month, as this report says, and 90% of teens say marijuana is easy to obtain, they've known for decades that this is a product that if they choose to use it, they're going to, and they're going to find a way to do that. But to witness the state stepping in to say this is inappropriate is kind of like dictating to you the same thing for cigarettes, alcohol. You run down the list of things that we try to send a message about. Nothing about legalization prohibits us from sending the same message that you shouldn't use a substance that alters your mind, especially as a young person. You shouldn't get behind the wheel of a car if you are under the influence of something. That message can continue, and there's nothing about legalization that prohibits us from advancing that issue. One of the things the RAND report says about regulating this product is it better enables us to deliver that message, because you can be public about saying things like we do now with tobacco and alcohol, that this is not a good product for you to be using. We can't do that right now because it looks completely silly if we tried it. But if we regulated it, we have that ability to continue education in a way that we can reach directly into schools and make a statement about it.
Representative Strong, Senator Benning just mentioned alcohol, tobacco. These are things that the state regulates. So why is marijuana in a different category?
Well, personally, I just see in the long run that we have enough substances that we are abusing and using as a culture, and we're adding more to the plate. So long term, I see the overall, any benefits we get out of taxes from legalizing marijuana, I see that being overshadowed by the things that are going to be harmful in the bigger picture.
Senator Benning, do you think that the legislature in 2015 is going to address this issue, or is it going to have to wait until 2016?
My own preference, Bob, is that we have a lot of other things on our plate right now that are far more important than this issue. Although I am a libertarian at heart, even though a member of the Republican Party, I come from the libertarian wing of that party. I feel it is important to eventually talk about, but right now with $100 million worth of budget shortfall, or 99, I can't remember, 93.4, something like that. The bottom line is we have a whole lot on our plate, and dealing with this in a substantive way this year, I would find to be problematic.
There's some estimates, Senator Benning, that Vermont might be getting $25, $30, $40, $50 million in new revenue. Is that tempting?
I've seen the report. It says 20 to 75 million per year, if my memory is correct. That has to be tempered by several other things. First off, there will be additional problems creating state employees and the red tape necessary to regulate if you're going to reach that potential. Those are startup costs that you have to spend before you ever see that kind of revenue. The other thing is that the black market has to be suppressed in such a way that it's not undercutting whatever potential revenue there could be. In addition to which, if you have cross-border tourism that dramatically increases, the states around us are going to take up this issue because they're not going to sit back and watch us scooping up all this revenue. And then you also have the issue of whether the feds will then step in because of the cross-border issues. And states that are surrounding Colorado right now, for example, are suing Colorado because of this problem.
It's an issue we're going to be following very closely in the future. Many thanks to our two legislative guests today, Representative Vicki Strong and Senator Joe Benning. Many thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That is our program for today. Tomorrow, Vermont's Muslim population now numbers around 3,500, bolstered by the influx of refugees to the state. We'll speak to Iman Islam Hassan of the Vermont Islamic Society about the growth of the Muslim community and how it deals with events around the world that reflect badly on their religion. Send your questions or comments about Vermont's Muslim community to VermontEdition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Sangari. We have production assistance from Devin Karamblis. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening.